Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. I was out of town on this Sunday, April 29th, so my good friend Scott Wilkinson filled in. It's going to be a great show, episode 870. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile. Brought to you by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. I have a great offer to get you started. A 30-day free trial, plus get double storage. All you have to do, visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and use my promo code, TechGuy.
Well, hey, 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 welcome, and a good day to you. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and online editor of HomeTheater.com, filling in for Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo's away this weekend on a fabulous adventure, photographing his little heart out in Norway. And he is undoubtedly having a wonderful time. I'm quite envious, but you know what? I get the greatest consolation prize in the world. I get to sit here for 3 hours doing what I love best, which is talking about home theater. And I hope you will join me in that conversation. There are a couple of ways to do it. You can, of course, call, and I hope you will, at 8888-ASK-LEO. And that is, I'm going to have to call up what that translates to in numbers, because I don't remember exactly, but I'll tell you that in a minute. The other thing you can do, of course, is join our wonderful chat room, which is humming right along here. Got about 600 people or so in there. It's well moderated. It's family friendly. Not at all a scary place. So I do hope that you will join in there, because I'm watching it as we go along, and any questions that I can't answer, somebody in the chat room probably can. So do go hang out in there if you can. You can get there through the radio show website, which is techguylabs.com. So here we are on a lovely Sunday in Petaluma. It is a beautiful day out. Yesterday was the Butter and Egg Days Parade, and today they're having some sort of antiques fair, so I'm going to go check that out later. But, you know, somebody asked me not long ago, one of the differences between audio and video is that audio products, people often shop for antique video products, speaking of antiques. They look for the old audio products that are 20, 30 years old, but nobody looks for a 20 or 30-year-old TV because the technology has advanced so far that, you know, your parents' old Zenith, I was about to say Victrola, but that's not quite right, your parents' old Zenith or Magnavox TV, you know, with standard definition, it was 4x3, it was a tube TV, weighed about 500 pounds, you know, people used to keep TVs for 20, 30 years very often. I remember in my household, we certainly did for a very long time, and these days you don't so much, because the pace of innovation has picked up, as it has with so many things in our wonderful technological world. But audio is a little different. You know, people still value the sound of tubes, for example. Even if they don't measure particularly accurately, they still impart a quality to the sound that people really like and they really gravitate toward. In fact, that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about with my guest on tomorrow's edition of Home Theater Geeks, my podcast show on Leo's TWiT network. It records on Mondays from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Pacific time, or 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern time. And you can tune in at live.twit.tv and watch us record the show. Or you can pick it up afterwards as a podcast at iTunes or at twit.tv, on YouTube, and at my website, hometheater.com. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to be talking with Steve Guttenberg, not the actor, but the audiophile, who contributes to Home Theater magazine and hometheater.com, as well as his own blog on CNET called audiophiliac.com. And he is going to be arguing that the process of measuring audio gear is not very important, and that what's more important is how well somebody likes a product. And certainly the subjective evaluation is very important. You have to buy what you like, which is the same for other antiques as well, and art and anything else. You need to buy what you like. And he's going to argue that measurements aren't so important. Whereas he recently had a discussion about this, shall we say, politely, with Tile Hertzens, the editor of one of our sibling sites called innerfidelity.com, which is aimed at headphones and personal audio. And Tile, who is a very astute fellow and has been on my podcast also, he measures headphones inside a very expensive isolation chamber on a very expensive dummy head with real ears that are modeled after human ears. And he takes a lot of measurements and finds them to be important. We also at hometheater.com, we measure all the audio equipment we review, although we don't reveal those measurements to the reviewer until after they've established their subjective impressions. We don't want those measurements to color what the reviewer thinks as they're evaluating the product by listening to music or soundtracks on of movies and so on. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation, and I do hope very much that you will tune in to that. That is tomorrow from 1:30 to 2:30 Pacific or 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern. Here's that number, by the way. The phone number, which I mentioned earlier, 8888-ASK-LEO. It translates to 888-827-5536. So I do hope that you give me a call or jump into the chat room, and let's talk about home theater. You know, Leo, of course, talks about all forms of technology, cell phones, camcorders, although not that much these days. Camcorders are more digital cameras, still cameras that happen to shoot video. Computers, of course, lots of computers. You know, my specialty is home theater and all things AV, not only in the home, but also if you go out to the movies. Now, some people that I know don't even like to go out to the movies very much because they like their home theater. And in many ways, a good home theater can at least equal, if not better, the performance of going out to the movies. And in some cases, that's absolutely true. But I still like going out to the movies. I like the social experience. I like the fact that the picture is very much bigger. The sound is mixed a little differently because the speakers are much farther away. And, of course, you get to see the movie before you can see it in your home theater, before it's released on Blu-ray or streaming on Netflix or whatever. So I do not. I in fact enjoy going to the movies, particularly for 3D, because 3D benefits from a much bigger screen. So I would encourage you to go out to the movies. If you can find digital projection, I find that much superior to film projection. There are those who disagree with that as well, but that's my preference. It's rock steady. You don't have those real change markers every 20 minutes in the upper right-hand corner. And things just look a lot smoother, a lot cleaner, a lot crisper to me. Got a couple of visitors in the studio today. I'm so happy to welcome Bob and Alice Saunders. I got it right. Oh, Rob? My apologies, yes. Yes, they're sitting here in the studio. They've come to visit from Sacramento. Hi, and thank you so much for being here. And we're going to continue right after this. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, we're recording this show for the podcast as well as the radio show, and I think Leo has a message for us from ShareFile.
Back with more of Scott Wilkinson. I hope you're enjoying the Tech Guy. Sorry I couldn't be here, but Norway called. I figured, hey, I've got Scott Wilkinson. I don't have to worry about that. He's going to take care of everything. But I would like to take a little time to talk to you via the magic of radio about ShareFile.com. This is a really great solution to a very big problem in business. How often do we want to email files to clients or customers or colleagues in the course of business? But there's always a hitch. First of all, big file sizes now often that you'll get a bounce back. And worst case, you don't get a bounce back, but the client didn't get it. Also, in many businesses, you've got to keep this secure, probably most. You've got to keep this secure, confidential. You want to control the spreadsheet or the proposal that you're sending out. ShareFile lets you do all that. It's really a way of sharing files designed for business. It doesn't have that fly-by-night appearance that some of these guys do. It really works. It's very efficient. You send files of almost any size, access your files from any computer or mobile device. You really can enhance your workflow easily, securely with ShareFile. I want you to try it. I've got a great offer, a 30-day free trial. Plus, when you use my offer code TECHGUY, all one word, TECHGUY, you'll get double storage free for 30 days. TECHGUY. Go to ShareFile.com. It's from Citrix, so you know this is going to be well-designed. It's going to work right, and it's going to be secure. It's HIPAA-compliant. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY for double storage. Now, I think, yes, back to Scott Wilkinson and more of the Tech Guy Show. Scott?
Leave it to Kyle, the man spinning the tunes and scratching his little heart out. We were talking offline about the headphones that I'm wearing. Those of you who are watching the video stream will see that I'm wearing not the standard headphones that Leo usually wears. These are from a company called PSB, which is well known for speakers. Paul Barton, hence the name of the company, is the speaker designer there and a good friend and an excellent speaker designer. And he decided he wanted to have a pair of headphones that were noise-canceling headphones so that he could use them on the plane. And I always wear noise-canceling headphones on the plane. And so he sent me a pair to check out, and I decided to use them on the show. I use them on the flight up here, and I usually use Bose Quiet Comfort 15s. And I have to tell you, I'm not a big fan of Bose products in general, but their noise-canceling headphones, in terms of their noise-canceling ability, are fabulous, just great. And I have to say, they even beat out these PSBs in terms of noise-canceling. But in terms of sound quality, when you're listening to music, the PSBs have it all over the Bose. They really do. Now, they're expensive. They're $400, which is very expensive. The Bose Quiet Comfort 15s are $300. So, you know, you're still talking a lot of money either way you go. And they're over-the-ear headphones, which I definitely recommend. I prefer. But if you want really high-quality sound for music listening, the PSBs are phenomenal. And I'm really happy for them. So in addition to Bob and Rob, I did it again. Darn. Rob and Alice Saunders here from Sacramento. We also have James Messer from Tallahassee, Florida. Wow. Come clear across the country to hang with us in the studio today. Thank you so much for being here and welcome. Rob and Alice were actually talking before the show about they might want to get, they were asking about speakers for a small room in their house to listen to music, listen to movies, really. On their computer and on a relatively big screen TV. And Steven in Turlock, California, has a similar question regarding the solution that I suggested to them. Steven, hi, you're on the show. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hi, Scott. I had a similar question when I heard that intro. I was like, hey, that's what I want to know. do you have a suggestion for a low-cost soundbar?
Yes. We have just started reviewing soundbars on hometheater.com, and we don't have a lot of experience yet, but I will say that the Vizio VHT215 came out pretty good. It's a single soundbar that, for those who might not know, a soundbar is basically a long, skinny speaker, several speakers within one cabinet that usually sits under a flat panel TV. Sometimes it has a subwoofer, a separate subwoofer, connected with it, either by a wire or wirelessly, and that can be placed just about anywhere in the room. And many of them simulate surround sound. If you sit, particularly if you sit in a certain sweet spot, right? And when you do, they use all sorts of psychoacoustical trickery to fool your brain into thinking that you've got speakers at least to the sides of you, or at least outside of the physical confines of the box itself. So that is, and the Vizio does that. Most of them do, and so that I don't remember what the cost is. I'll have to go look that up. I'll look that up and say it on the show a little bit later. But it's a couple $100, something like that. It's not too bad. So of the ones we've done so far in the low cost range, that's the one that I would recommend.
Then I have one other question. That you had mentioned a product about a year ago after going to Vegas with Leo, mm-hmm. about speakers that were quite like tinny, but then they were cheap, and then you flip this one switch and synchronize them all, and it became great.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to remember what you were talking about. It was like over a year ago, I think.
Well, you know,
they worked out then.
Well, you know, my brain is kind of a FIFO buffer, right? First in, first out. And so a year ago is a long time ago. I don't remember that particular thing. I will say, in terms of low cost speakers, let me just answer the question about low cost speakers. My favorites by far come from Pioneer. They are the they are called the SP-BS 21 and 41. They are kind of boxy. They're not exactly svelte, shall we say. But you can buy a 5.1 system with the 41s in the front and the 21s in the back for like $528, including a subwoofer. And it sounds...
Would that be a lot better than the soundbar?
It would. If you have the room for it, no soundbar can replace a true surround system. And that is really what you want if you want to get involved in the movie. All movies on Blu-ray certainly are mixed with at least 5.1 channels, some more and more these days, 7.1 channels. And if you have the real speakers around you, you get much more of the immersion, much more of the immersive experience that the movie is intended to provide. So unless you're really limited on space, in which case a soundbar is an adequate substitution, it's certainly much better than listening to the speakers in the TV itself, which are never any good, never. So if you don't have the room for a true surround system, get a soundbar. If you do have room for surround speakers, that's going to provide a much better experience.
Thank you very much.
My
question. Thanks.
Thank you so much for calling. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Dan in Van Nuys. Hi, Dan. You're on with Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How can I help you?
Yes, we often talk about how far from a flat screen we should be. I was wondering about the height. Is there a proper height?
Good question.
Flat screen?
You bet. That's a great question. I get this question all the time from people who want to mount their flat screen over the fireplace. Right? And I always say, don't do it. You'll kill yourself. Actually, you won't kill yourself, but you'll give yourself a pain in the neck, literally.
Right.
Because you're looking up at the display.
Exactly.
So the best place to mount any TV, any display, is such that is so that your eyes are level with the center of the screen. That's at your seated height, where you're going to be sitting to watch the TV. The ideal height is whatever your seated eye height is.
I see.
And sometimes that's easy, and sometimes it's not. And you know, some little variation above or below that's okay. But whatever you do, don't put it above the fireplace. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, well, as those of you who are watching the podcast know, this is a podcast in addition to being a radio show. And we have a couple of sponsors of the podcast that we would like to thank very much. This episode of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Ford, among others, featuring available voice-activated Sync App Link. Sync App Link enables you to control select mobile apps from your smartphone with simple voice commands, helping you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Very important. With Sync App Link, you can voice control apps from Pandora, Stitcher, OpenBreak, Slacker Radio, iHeartRadio, and NPR in your car. I could sure use that. Take advantage of the new apps and features, including Sync Destinations. Get access to navigation and directions through your compatible smartphone. NPR gets the latest breaking news and plays your favorite NPR programs. And iHeartRadio ThumbPlay service uses simple voice commands to let you find your saved stations, skip to the next song, even give a song a thumbs up. Sync App Link is built on an API platform, enabling Ford and app developers to bring in-vehicle voice control to more apps without you having to update the App Link software in the vehicle. Ford has a Sync mobile application developer network that enables developers to contact Ford about their app ideas, allowing Ford to bring them to you faster. You can expect to see more Sync-enabled mobile apps that can go along for the ride in Ford vehicles. Learn more about Sync App Link and other technologies at ford.com/technology. And we sure thank Ford so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Welcome back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And that music right there is some of the music for Uncharted 3, I believe. Our next guest is going to be able to verify that for me. He's Greg Edmondson, the composer of that music for Uncharted, for several of the Uncharted video games, as well as for Firefly, one of my favorite TV series of all time. And for quite a few of the episodes of King of the Hill. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and good day, sir.
Thank you. I had the honor and privilege of playing some sounds for one of those Uncharted games, and, you know, some, I think, didgeridoo and seashell trumpet and all kinds of horn-type sounds, and that was a lot of fun. I just had a great time. And then Leo and I were very lucky to be able to come visit you at Skywalker Sound, where you were recording the soundtrack for, was it Uncharted 2?
It was Uncharted 2, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you have made quite a career out of recording music for TV and video games, more video games these days, right?
You know what? I made a decision after Firefly. I was still doing King of the Hill, but I was lucky enough to get started on the Uncharted series. And at this point in time, video games give you resources that you would never have in television, and you would only have on a major feature film. They hire you a large orchestra, and give you the time to do something special. So when that opportunity presented itself, I went in that direction. So I've focused on the video games and mixed other projects in around them, but I'm so thrilled to be part of the Uncharted franchise.
Oh, yeah. I guess partly the reason that video games might be able to offer you greater resources, bigger orchestras, and more time to do things, is that the video game business is actually much larger even than the movie and TV business, isn't it?
In many ways, they make more money off the video games than they do off of a film.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, exactly right. And then most recently, you told me when we were talking about you being on the show that you recorded something at Abbey Road.
That was Uncharted 3.
Oh, which is what we just heard.
That was exactly right.
Yeah.
How thrilling that was.
Oh, man.
As you know from playing in an orchestra, and I'm glad you brought up your contributions because I was going to mention them as well.
Oh, thanks.
We also had the shofar and the Tibetan horn, if you recall.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. That was really fun.
But it's such a joy to be on the stage with musicians like that. And that kind of helps to bring humanity to a game.
Mm.
I think one of the things that's really interesting about video games right now is the iteration changes every time you do a game, because the game engine changes.
Mm.
We all know how to make a film, and we all know how to make a TV show. The technology that changes is, you know, you may have new cameras and be shooting digitally and not on film.
Right.
It's the game engine in video games that changes every time. So now the characters can do things they could not do before.
Mm.
You can capture human things. And in a weird way, they're becoming more and more capable of emotion than they ever were before. Yeah.
Well, I suppose that might be because of the fact that the processing power increases very rapidly. And so by the time a new game comes out, you have greater computer power in which to do more things than you could before.
That is part of it. And part of it is the process. I'll give you an example. The way at least they do Uncharted now is they bring the actors on the stage and they put them in a mocap suit, which stands for motion capture, has all the little balls on it. So the actor's actually doing the physical act that they're supposed to be doing in the game. If he's supposed to be running with a gun, well, he's running with the gun and the cameras are capturing all that motion. But they also have a sound man with a boom. So while he's delivering his dialogue, he's delivering it as he's running. It didn't used to be that way.
Mm.
Used to, in the early days, they would draw the character and then bring the actor in and do it as an ADR line.
Right.
Which means the actor was just standing in front of a microphone, not doing anything. Now they are capturing the dialogue as the actor actually does it. And so it makes it feel real. So, you know, more and more the games are just becoming capable of real emotion in addition to everything else that they could always do.
Yeah. Now, there's one question I really wanted to ask that I still don't quite understand. With a movie or a TV show, it's linear, right? You compose the music from beginning to end. But with a game, there could be many different branching possibilities, right? You could go off in this direction or you could go off in that direction. How do you handle that with the music? Because it seems to me that the music would have to follow that branching. And how do you make that so seamless?
There is a whole another creative element to games, which is implementing the music into the game, which is just what you just talked about.
Mm.
But when I write, they will give me, you know, a little scene and say it's going to look something like this. But of course, you know, in an interactive situation, it's all changeable because it depends on what the player does.
Right.
He may choose to go in guns blazing, or he may choose to kind of stealth in, and you have to be prepared for all those possibilities. And I must say that I'm, you know, making and implementing the music into a game is a team effort.
Mm.
And this, the Sony team that I work with, it spends so many countless hours taking the music that I wrote and implementing it in interesting ways into the game. And sometimes music that you wrote for one section, when all is said and done, you may find out it works as well or better in another section.
Hmm.
The main thing for me is you want to keep it from sounding like it's looping, which was how music had to be in the old days.
Yeah, in the
you
old days, early video
loop
games.
Come around.
Yeah, sure.
And that kind of I found detracting, you know, from the experience. So again, as the game engine becomes more powerful, they can literally cut from one cue to another so that it doesn't feel like it's looping. Even if you come back to the original cue, you've broken it up with something different.
Well, I guess you're right. The fact that you've got more power in the computing engine or the game engine allows you to do more of that than you were able to as well.
True.
I got a bunch of people in the chat room asking about Firefly. You know, that was so many of us are so sad that did not last more than one season. And, you know, there's all sorts of talk about wanting to bring it back and so on. And your music was just wonderful. A couple people in the chat were asking about how you combined the acoustic guitar and the kind of twangy Western sound with the synthesizer type type sounds. How did you manage to integrate those?
I wish I could think of a clever answer. I mean, the original vision was Joss Whedon's.
Right.
He wanted to do a space show that was the anti-space show. So where in Star Trek, you'd have, if you had a shot of the ship in space, it'd be bum ba bum ba ba bum, you know, that kind of stuff with French horns. Joss's idea was, hey, what if we did it with dobro and fiddle, and just something that's, but it wasn't really that it was a Western. It really wasn't a Western. It was just a post-apocalyptic show that kind of harkened back to the origins of our country. You know, so that at some, you know, at some point in time, if you were a Rockefeller living in New York, your life was very, very different than if you were staking a claim in Missouri. So in Joss's world, depending on your circumstances, anything made sense. You could have laser guns. You could have six shooters. It all depended on your station in life. And he had created what he knew to be the perfect television show. And when I got that gig and they gave me the 2-hour pilot, I said, I'm working for 10 years. 10 years without even looking back, and I look. Little did I know it was going to be closer to 10 episodes.
Yeah,
I still think that was one of the best shows ever created. He had 9 characters with wildly divergent past.
Yep,
it could have gone so many ways without ever repeating itself.
Oh, absolutely, it was a great ensemble. Each character was wonderful. I have to tell you also that you used one element in that soundtrack, and we're almost out of time here. But that big gong bell thing that you used in that soundtrack over and over again, and I never got tired of it. I want to thank you so much, Greg Edmondson, for being a guest on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. This is Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, in for Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. It's Scott Wilkinson here, Home Theater Geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The music you're hearing, that opening little call, is a seashell trumpet. In fact, here comes again. Thank you so much, Kyle. This is a piece called Call of the Sea, I think. Anyway, it's some music that my friend Jeff Rona wrote for the Beijing Olympics, some of the water sport competitions, sailing, I think. He wrote some music for that and called upon me to play the seashell trumpet, which I was very happy to do. And there it is. It's something I also played on Uncharted 2. So if you're a fan of Uncharted 2 and you play that, you might very well hear my seashell trumpet call on that, which, as Greg Edmondson just said in our little interview. I also played the didgeridoo, the Tibetan trumpet, Tibetan big trumpet, the shofar, the Jewish ritual ram's horn trumpet, and some other things. So that was great. I was really happy to hear Greg Edmondson talk about composing for video games and also a little bit of anecdotal stuff from Firefly, one of my favorite TV series of all time. Let's go back to the phones. I'm going to talk to Gary in Santa Monica. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. I'm going to take you back to this vintage idea to some degree about video DVD servers. I have a client who originally had, I think you may have heard of this, an iMuse Sierra 2.
I vaguely remember that name.
A Denver company that must have, according to what I can find on the web, been in business 2 or 3 years and just disappeared.
Yeah.
But anyway, that stuff is in the basement, and now they've replaced it with Kaleidoscape, a more popular but very expensive DVD server.
Yeah.
And they're moving out of this home, and they don't need it in the new home, and there's an expectation that the new owner won't want it either. So what do you suggest one does with very high-end audio video equipment like this?
Well, there's always eBay.
I know, I've looked, and to be honest, it's rare to see it there.
There's another website we talked about yesterday called audiogon.com. That's a site on which people buy and sell used audio mostly.
Okay.
So this would be a little off the beaten track for that because it's video. The other problem, though, is that Kaleidoscape is still in some legal hot water about serving DVDs over a network.
Correct.
I believe I just saw an email about that a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sorry, I probably won't be able to put my hands on it right away, that they were ruled against.
Right, but there's I understand there's appeals and there's things that keep this, just like Apple keeps going up against so many
yes.
of their competitors, and it can stay in the courts for years.
Exactly,
but,
right.
You know, these servers are filled with hundreds of movies that, of course, you know, have to stay with the owner, and
mm-hmm.
Kaleidoscape said, of course, just erase them or take the drives out see what the market bears. I mean, but this is not a popular, I mean, I'm lucky. I know five homes that have this installed, but I believe it's a kind of $50,000 to $250,000 service.
It's a very expensive system, absolutely very expensive. SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room says that there's a sister site, videogon.com, for video gear. So I didn't know about that. So that's going to be a good place to go.
Okay.
VideoGon.com for video gear. And
okay, great. I'll give that a try because it's good equipment. It should go to somebody who would use it.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. Bye. Okay, I'm going to go to Andy in San Bernardino. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too. How can I help you?
Yeah, I had a question about... I just want to use a receiver, like 50% of the time, and for listening to music, two channels, and then the rest of the time for surround sound. But I was wondering if it would be, I was looking at some older receivers online,
mm-hmm.
you know, about 10 years old,
mm.
and I'm wondering, would I miss out much if I get a receiver that didn't have HDMI?
Well, do you have any source devices that have HDMI outputs?
No, not really, but I was planning to get like the Blu-ray and...
Sure. I wouldn't if I were you. I would recommend against that. Because if you're planning to get a Blu-ray player, which I certainly would recommend, if you're going to watch movies, that's the way to do it. The best way to do it. Not the only way, but it's the best way. And, if you start off with a 10-year-old product that doesn't do a lot of stuff, another thing that old receiver wouldn't do is be able to decode or accept the new lossless audio codecs, decoders. DTS and Dolby both have... very high quality audio formats, which an older receiver would not be able to deal with. So that's another reason to get a new one. And you know what? New receivers, we've found some really good ones for under $500. So it's not a big expensive thing to necessarily do. The Denons, the lower end Denons, and Onkyos. Are really quite good, and they have the HD.
Looking at that.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was looking at that. What is it? The 1312.
1312. Yeah, I'd probably go a little higher than that. What's your budget? Is one question certainly.
Probably for a receiver around maybe 300
mm-hmm.
around there.
Mm-hmm. 1312 might be a little much. David Vaughn was on yesterday, and he was telling us he's reviewing an Onkyo that's in the $350 range. I'll have to remember what model that was. Keep listening to the show, and I'll find that out and say it out a little bit later. But it was I think it was an Onkyo, and that would certainly be.
Yeah, want the 5-year extended warranty.
Yeah, well, they did have some problems. They did have some reliability issues, which apparently they've solved. And they took care of business by extending the warranty of the products that were already out in the field. So kudos to them for sure.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what I would
do. Just one more question if I have time.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Would it be good to get an older receiver or amplifier just for T-channel?
I don't see why. You can do two channel just as well with a newer multi channel receiver. just use two channels. Unless you unless you want to put it in a different room. You know, if you want to have like a two-channel listening system versus a multi-channel listening system for your movies and stuff, then sure, an older receiver might be fine. But if you only have one system, then you can listen to two-channel just as well with a multi-channel receiver.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You answered all my questions.
Good deal. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're doing a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you so much. I really
love it.
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
See ya. Okay. I got some stuff in the chat room here. David Bix is saying Pioneer regularly has a good one at Newegg for $180, $150 on sale. Razlak says the Onkyo TX SR313 is $299 MSRP. Lazy Guru is talking about Denon refurbished products. That might be another way to go. So there are many options there for receivers that won't cost you a lot, but have what you need, which really is HDMI inputs and the new audio format decoding, which now virtually all of them do. And they also all virtually all pass 3D. If you're interested in 3D, you want a receiver that will take 3D from a 3D Blu-ray player or a 3D set-top box, a broadcast set-top box from
40 seconds.
The channels that do that, and pass those along to the TV or the display. So, you know, you don't have to spend a lot for a reasonably good receiver. And then you don't have to spend a lot for speakers either. We were talking about that earlier this hour, that the Pioneer 21 and 41 speakers, $500 for a 5.1 surround system. You know, you're into your sound system then for well under $1,000. You can get a good TV for $1,000 or so, and you got yourself a home theater. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. Well, hello there. Welcome. Come on in. The tech is fine. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek and online editor of HomeTheater.com, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who you might have been expecting today, but no, he's in Norway, having a wonderful photographic adventure that I'm sure we'll hear all about next week. But meanwhile, I'm here to talk about home theater and audio, video, even going out to the movies. Anything to do with audio and video, then I love to talk about it. Big screen TV, surround sound, Blu-ray, AV receivers, all that kind of stuff. All the stuff that really is the modern means of storytelling. Last night, we went out to a live play, and that's a totally different kettle of fish. But when you don't have the opportunity to do that, the technology involved in storytelling has evolved so much over the last 10 years that that it's really quite astonishing and quite wonderful to have a situation in your home where you have a big screen TV, you've got speakers surrounding you, and you can pause it when you need to. And it really can be a very engaging, involving experience. And I'm here to help you get the most out of whatever system you have. Not everybody has a dedicated home theater, of course. If you have a TV in your living room, if you have just a couple of speakers, whatever you have, there are ways to get the most out of it, and that's really what I'm dedicated to doing. Yesterday in the chat room, there was a fellow who, or someone, it's hard to tell the gender of who's in the chat room by their chat room names, but in any event, someone in the chat room was commenting that, you know, gee, I guess this is a show for people who already know all about this stuff, and if I don't know anything about it, how can I possibly join in? Well, I hope you do join in, because in my world, as far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as a stupid question. If you don't know something, you don't know it, and I'm here to help you learn more. Now, of course, I've got to answer the questions that I'm asked more or less at the level that they are asked, but I do want to encourage you and invite you to give me a call at 888-ASK-LEO, which is 888-827-5536, or come on into the chat room, which in which there are about 700 people right now. These are the smart kids, kids in the back of the house, back of the room, I should say. But they're the cool kids too. They really are very nice, very knowledgeable, and not intimidating. And we have a bunch of great moderators in the chat room to make sure it stays family friendly, and to make sure it stays non-intimidating, because I do want to be very inclusive. I want to make sure that everybody knows that they are welcome to come in. If you don't know something, join the rest of the crowd, because not everybody, no one knows everything, not even me. And when I don't know something, I turn to the chat room, because somebody in there probably does. Or if not, I'll do some research and find out the answer. So I do not want you to be frightened of coming in or intimidated for to ask a question. All questions are fair game, and I will certainly do my darndest to illuminate your question, provide you the information you need to get the most out of what you have, or to buy what you really need without spending too much money, and perhaps fix a problem that you might be having. We've got a bunch of callers on the line. I'm going to just go right back into it here. In fact, I've got a musician on the line, and I got to go to him. Joe in Thomasville, Georgia.
Hey, Scott, it's very, very pleasurable to talk with you. You remind me of an old friend that I used to have back in the 70s, and we would spend hours and hours just messing around with old audio stuff and talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's just a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really glad you gave a call, and you're a bass player, huh?
I am a bass player, and my first question, and if I have time for a little one after that, I'll hit you with it. But my first question is, I just bought a new bass amp about 3 months ago. It's a digital bass amp, mm-hmm. or monoblock. But I used to play through a MOSFET bass amp. What do you think the difference is between the two?
Well, let me just explain to everybody that relatively recently there has been an uptick in the use of what's called a digital amplifier, which basically takes in a signal.
Isn't that just basically just for the money? I mean,
well, there's a couple of reasons why. I won't explain how it works. It doesn't matter. It is far more efficient than an analog amplifier.
Okay.
So it converts much more of the input signal to an output signal without generating a lot of heat.
Right. Well, this is fan cooled.
Well, you know, it still generates some heat. So,
sure.
Okay. They're often less expensive. I will say that digital amps are more commonly used for the low frequencies. So I'm not at all surprised that your bass amp is digital.
Yeah.
The other kind, the analog amp, you mentioned MOSFET, which is MOSFET, metal oxide semiconductor field effect transistor.
Right.
Okay, so that is an analog type of amplifier, which uses a solid-state device. It's not a tube-based amp.
Well, the one that I have, believe it or not, though, does have a tube preamp in it.
Oh, okay, so it has a tube preamp, but a MOSFET output stage.
But a MOSFET power section.
Power section, okay. So what are the differences between them, other than efficiency? Because your tube-based MOSFET amplifier is very inefficient. It generates a lot of heat, I'll bet.
Right.
But they have, digital and analog amps have different tonal characters. MOSFET, analog amps in general, and tube preamps in particular, have a very warm quality to them.
Right, right.
Whereas digital amps are very flat. Some people call them analytical. Some people call them dry. So, you know, that's a matter of personal preference.
Well, I'm blind, and I immediately, the first night that I started playing through this amp, I immediately heard the difference, and I was like, gee, I don't know whether I want to stick with this or not. And, of course, the more I played it and the more I played around with it, the more accustomed I got to it. And I guess it's all right. right. I mean, I wouldn't jump up and down about it. But
well, and did you jump up and down about your analog amp?
I had had many, many compliments on how sweet that thing sounded.
Yeah.
When I played it, many compliments.
Well, but, you know, there you go.
The other comment that I would like to make, well, the only problem is I think I see more of the companies moving toward digital because when I had researched buying a new one, that's basically in the price range of say, $600-$700, that's basically what you would get would be a digital amp.
Yeah. Well, that is true. They're less expensive, and home theater and audio reproduction is also moving towards digital. Full range.
Yeah, I have a Sony, and I wish I could tell you the model of it, but you were talking about soundbars. What this thing is it's a little soundbar. Mm. I've got a Bravia 40-inch Sony,
mm-hmm.
and this little thin speaker sits, believe it or not, it's thin enough that I can sit it right on top of that TV. I made two little brackets that'll make sure it won't flip off the back.
Sure.
And put it on there, and this Sony soundbar has also a subwoofer, like you were saying, that connects to it.
Yep.
And it does a really neat job, considering for what it is. Now, I do have a 6.1 JVC surround system,
mm-hmm.
which I use when I really want to raise a little heck in the house or something like that.
Well, you want that real immersion.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I'm sorry we're out of time here. But this is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, all you hip cats and hip kittens, it's Scott Wilkinson coming at you over the airwaves. This is the Cabrillo College Reunion Jazz Band, a band that I played in 35 years ago. And we got together for a reunion concert. This is a live recording made last fall. And it was amazing. It was amazing to sit in this band with many of the same people I sat in with the band with 35 years ago. In fact, I was reading the music, and some of my notes that I put in that music 35 years ago were still there. I was amazed. I was like, wait, that's my handwriting. There's the trombone section. And
what's this section?
This particular tune is called Bebop Charlie.
Rich Fenno.
Oh, and there's Rich Fenno doing a solo. I don't think anybody in Santa Cruz can hear this because... Oh, that's not Rich Fenno. That's my friend Steve Wilson. Hey, very good. I hope he's listening. He's down in Santa Cruz. He still lives in Santa Cruz 35 years later. Yeah, yeah. Groovin'. So cool. Thank you, Kyle, so much for playing this. This is taking me back. Taking me back big time. But you know what? We're here to talk about home theater, so I can't stay in memory lane too very long, much as I would love to. Instead, I'm going to go to Vaughn in Laguna, California. Hey, Vaughn, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Just rocking out there for a minute, sorry.
I have one question for you and two recommendations after that, if I have time.
Sure, go for it.
The first question is, I walked into a Sony store, and they were displaying a Blu-ray and sound system combo purchasing and they were displaying the movie Thor. And then there's this particular scene that I watched there where it was all quiet and the king just pounds his staff on the floor.
Oh,
and you can literally feel like you're in a hallway, like in like a castle or something, even though it's just a flat image on the screen. It sounds really real.
I remember that scene very well.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, is there I know they don't go too cheap, but is there a reasonable price for Blu-ray and sound system combo purchasing?
Sure. What you're talking about is really called a home theater in a box.
Okay.
Okay, which is a system that includes a receiver, a Blu-ray player, often combined in the same physical cabinet, and then a 5.1 or a 7.1 speaker system, and all the cables you need that are often color-coded, so it's very difficult to make a mistake. You can just hook it up. It's very easy.
Yeah.
And I do recommend, if you're going to get a home theater in a box system, or HTIB, as we often call it, that you do get one with a Blu-ray player, not a DVD player. You can still find them with DVD players, but that's only standard definition. And you really, really want Blu-ray with high definition if you possibly can.
Yeah, that's what I was going for, because Blu-ray is the best way to watch movies.
Yeah, yeah, no question.
Where's a good place to buy those?
Just about any place, I think. Best Buy, Fry's, Costco carries them, I'm sure. A lot of places do. You want to do a little research, though. You probably won't be able to audition them, you know?
Yes.
You won't be able to go in and actually, unlike what you did, you actually had one set up and you could go in and you could hear it. Was it in any kind of realistic or reasonable environment, like in a room, or was it out on this giant show floor?
Yes, it was like they were imitating it as if it was like a living room.
Perfect. That's exactly what you want to find if you can in a dealer, is a dealer that has a room like that you can actually audition in a reasonable circumstance.
Yes.
And you know, Sony makes good ones, Samsung makes good ones, Panasonic makes good ones, Onkyo. The last Onkyo we did was their top of the line 9400 THX. We were very happy with the receiver. It did not come with a Blu-ray player. You had to buy a separate Blu-ray player. But we weren't really that happy with the speakers. Now, I will tell you this about home theater in a box. Very often, they do not have a lot of inputs for other devices like game consoles or cable or satellite boxes or things like that. So if you have a variety of source devices that you want to plug in, many home theater in a box systems won't let you do that more than one or two. So you want to keep that in mind when you're shopping. The Onkyo let you have a bunch of inputs, but it didn't have a Blu-ray player. You had to buy that separately.
Okay, that's pretty good. And one of my recommendations for you is the next time, I think, personally, in my opinion, the next time you review a Blu-ray player or sound system with watching a movie, I really recommend you view it with Steven Spielberg's The Adventures of Tintin, because I think those animated movies really pop up with those colors really well.
Oh, they do.
And
they
do. Yeah. And especially because they come in like a 3D combo pack, I think it's really good on Blu-ray 3D as well.
Well, here's one problem. I agree with you. Animated movies look great, and that's actually one problem with using them in reviews, because they make everything, every display, look really good.
Yeah.
So what we try to do in our reviews more often than not is play the stuff that is what we call a torture test. You know, we want to see how well a display or a sound system performs with difficult material. Animated stuff is usually really easy material to make look good and sound good. But and sound good, I mean, sure, I'll use animated content to test sound systems, no problem. But I tend not to with video products, because it doesn't reveal anything, any problems.
I see. And my last recommendation for you is, I know you're a movie fan, this Friday, Marvel's The Avengers opens up. And I think that's going to be a really, really good experience. I recommend you to go watch that.
You bet. I'm planning to. I think it's going to be great. I loved Thor. I did not see Captain America. I loved Iron Man. So I'm looking forward very much to seeing The Avengers. I think it's going to be great. Go see it in 3D. Go see it in IMAX if you can, because IMAX is the best 3D.
Yeah, I bought tickets for IMAX.
Good. Excellent.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling.
Okay,
I got a minute left. I am going to go to Tony in East Tennessee. Hey, Tony, you're on with Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek. Welcome.
Hey, Scott, I appreciate you talking to me.
No problem.
Enjoy listening to you and Leo all the time.
Thank you so much.
I've got a question for you. I'm in the process of building a home theater. I've had my sound surround sound for a long time with an Anthem D2.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, the Q750i Runco LED.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're hearing a lot about 4K now.
Yeah.
That's far enough down the road not to worry about right now, would you say?
I would say. No, I would generally speaking say yes. How big is your screen? Oh, you know what?
Well,
can you hang on? Can you hang on a second? We've got we've come to the end of the hour. Just hold on there. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, back at you, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know who this is. Kyle, what music is this? It's really great.
I thought Chris would recognize it.
Oh, maybe Chris will recognize it.
It's from the 80s, but don't ask me. I don't really, it's from sometime in the 80s.
Okay, well, very good. Well, this might give you a clue out there in Radio Land that it's time to talk to Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, who I'm really happy to finally, in all of my subbing for Leo, I haven't managed to get Chris on, mostly my own fault for forgetting that it's his segment, and I really wanted to get him on here because I happen to be an avid photographer myself. But in talking with Chris offline, I found that he's also a musician and has a recording studio and stuff. So we share a lot of things. Exactly. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Scott, it's good to be finally geeking out with you about things. I was really looking forward to that. So very happy to be here.
We get to geek out together, finally. I'm really happy about that, yeah.
Not as active a musician anymore as I wish I would be, but still got a bass guitar hanging back there on the wall somehow.
Yeah, do you still play every once in a while? Get it down and warm up
once
your fingers?
In a while, yeah, but not enough. not nearly enough. So I have to pick that up again.
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason, the thing I wanted to talk to you about is I was trying to think, okay, how can we bring that photography and home theater thing together? And I think we ended up with projectors.
Because yes.
A camera is pretty much the same thing as a projector, just pretty much the other way around. So
in reverse,
the camera, you have something big that you project into the camera through a lens onto a small surface, the sensor, and that digitizes the picture.
Yep.
And a projector reverses that, and you have a small thing that projects out through a lens and makes a big picture. So that's exactly the other way around.
Yeah, that and you know what? That's also very much like microphones and speakers.
Yes, they are pretty much the same thing.
The same idea, where you have a sound wave coming into a microphone, it gets converted into an electrical signal by bouncing on a diaphragm, and then the speaker does the opposite thing. It has a diaphragm that wiggles and creates sound that goes out into the atmosphere.
When I was a kid, that I one time killed a microphone this way by hooking it up to an output, and I actually could hear sound from the microphone, a very faint sound, and then it just went up in the cloud
of
smoke.
And then it went up in smoke, yeah.
But it did work, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so a few things about projectors. I use them in my workshops. I use them all the time in photography. When you want to show pictures, projectors are actually a nice idea. I mean, we used to project slides on the wall, and a lit up picture, a big picture on the wall is something beautiful. But just a few things. Okay, how does a projector work? And for anyone who wants to go buy a projector, I won't be able to give you names, models, prices, and these kind of things, but just some general ideas about them. For example, LCD versus DLP. Mm-hmm. Those are the big system. There's LCOS in between, but LCD is like a slide, right? You project through an LCD.
Right.
A DLP is more like a mirror, so it bounces off a mirror through a color wheel. We'll get into that in a second.
Sure.
But those are pretty much the two important systems that are out there at this point.
Right. LCOS is kind of a combination of the two. It's an LCD panel, but it has a mirror behind it. So the light passes through the LCD panel, but then bounces off the mirror and back out to the lens. So it's kind of a combination of those two.
I haven't seen an LCOS projector yet. Are they any good?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. JVC LCOS projectors are fabulous. Okay. They're really, really good. Highly recommended.
So, a few years ago, I talked to a guy who worked for HP, and back when they were still making projectors, he told me that they had a color for the white screen that you project on. Mm-hmm. They would call that, what do you call that color? White, obviously.
Yes.
But as soon as you start projecting on that, they would have a different name for that color. They would call it black. Because that is pretty much as dark as that screen gets, right? The projector won't be able to make it any darker. So
right,
in projection, that white screen is your black point. That's the darkest thing you have. And something that I think everybody who doesn't really completely darken down their projection room fights is daylight or any sort of light.
Yes.
Because that takes away from the contrast. Because what it does, it makes that black, I'm making air quotes here, black screen, that white screen a bit brighter. And by raising that black point, you lose contrast so quickly. And that's the reason why cinemas darken down. And this is why I hate those emergency exit lights in cinemas, because they kind of take away that black point.
That's true. They have to be on, of course, for safety reasons, but are kind of distracting, certainly. And you're exactly right that if you're going to have a projection system, you really want to have complete control of the ambient light in the room, because as you say, if you don't, the black point, the black level that you experience, that you see on the screen, will rise, the contrast will decrease, the picture won't pop, it'll look washed out.
And it's really interesting, because in photography also contrast is really key to how well an image pops. It's not necessarily the absolute values of black and white. It's more the contrast between them that makes that picture come to life.
Right.
Very often, especially if you look at black and white photography, really dark blacks make a really popping picture. And interestingly enough, if you look at a projector, the way, and I'm going to talk about DLP here, the way they make the white seem more black, the way they kind of bring that picture to life is by throwing a whole lot of light on that screen. They pretty much create a lot of contrast between the darkest possible level on the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, because the way DLP works is that the mirror, the light bounces off a mirror, goes through a color wheel. That color wheel spins and has all the different colors on it.
Sort of like pie wedges. You have these filters of red, green, and blue in these pie wedges around the screen, and around the circle, rather, the wheel. And then this wheel spins, and as the green segment rotates into the light path, you see the green part of the image. And then as the red filter rotates into the light path, you see the red image on the screen, and so on and so on and so on, very quickly.
And now, you know how they make it even brighter? You know how they kind of raise that contrast level to really, really big levels?
How's that?
They have a so-called white segment in there. It's a segment that is color, that is white. So what happens is they add more of that white to the entire picture to kind of increase that brightness. But if you want to show photography or really beautiful colors, that white segment is going to be in your way. That's going to take away of the overall quality, which is why when you set a projector to cinema mode, typically the image goes a bit darker, but you get better colors because that switches off the white segment.
I don't think I knew that. Okay. I certainly always recommend setting the projector or any display really to cinema mode, because that's going to be a more accurate color reproduction, but I didn't realize that switched off the clear segment, if the color wheel has it. Not all projectors have that clear segment in their color wheel.
But in order to get to those huge specs that you sometimes see on the websites or in the manuals, those enormous contrast numbers, sometimes, I don't know, what have I seen lately? 50,000 to 1 or something?
Oh, yeah, or millions to 1. Those are all bogus anyway. Totally bogus. You know, in the few seconds we have left, I did want to ask you one quick question about the color accuracy of DLP projectors or LCD projectors when showing photographs, because the photographs are taken in a different color space than what movies are made in.
Yes. Well, you can profile a projector the same way you can profile a computer screen by getting an according color meter, setting it up according to the instructions of the color meter producer, and you will be able to put that in the light path, and it'll shine different colors at the color meter, and it will basically give you a better picture than you had before.
Fantastic. Chris Marquardt, thanks so much for being on. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is for you, Linus. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And, of course, Kyle Benham coming up with... actually, Linus in the chat room made this suggestion. Kyle probably would have come up with it himself anyway. Cyndi Lauper singing True Colors. And that's what we were talking about, Chris Marquardt and I, in the last segment, about how do you get true colors of photographs, digital photographs, on a projector. And unfortunately, we ran out of time before we were able to explore that fully. But I think it's an excellent topic that next time I get the opportunity to, I will pursue with our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, who also happens to be a projector guy and a music guy. Very versatile fellow. Meanwhile, we were talking to Tony about projectors. I'm going to get him back on. Hey, Tony, thanks for waiting.
Yes.
So you're talking about, you're building a home theater. You were talking about a Runco Q750i projector, which uses LED illumination instead of a bulb, which in many respects I like a lot. For one thing,
I've got a controlled room for it, too.
And so you do have a light-controlled room. Excellent. I was asking you how big your screen is.
Okay, we're going to go with between 105 and 115. I know they recommend about, 93 to 98.
Yeah, so you're going a little bigger, but that's okay if you've got light control. If you're totally light controlled, you can turn. And have you got the walls and ceiling and floor some dark neutral color?
Well, I will. I'm in the process of doing all that.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend that. Don't use white walls. A lot of people, you know, there's a special color that I've painted my testing studio and my home, my own home theater, which is called Munsell Gray, M-U-N-S-E-L-L. It's a special color of gray that has no hue. That is, it has no blue bias or red bias or green bias. It's right there in the black and white area of things. And just get it down as dark as you can. When I was doing my home,
you do your ceiling the same color too.
Sorry,
would you do the ceiling the same way too?
Absolutely, yes, indeed. Ceiling same. Now it makes the building look a little. I mean, the room look a little. I mean, it's a little dark. It's perhaps a little claustrophobic. I didn't go pure black. You could you could go pure black, but I felt that that would be a little too oppressive.
Yeah.
So I went with 9% reflectivity, okay, which is a very dark gray. And, it, you know, when you turn the lights off in there, it's a black hole.
Well, that's what you want when you watch the movie.
That's right. That's exactly right. And especially with the Runco Q750, which uses LEDs as its illumination source. And I should explain that most projectors use a lamp. It's kind of like a fancy light bulb. Which produces a white light, and then either you have, as Chris and I were talking about in the last segment, a color wheel that spins and gives you a red filter, a green filter, and a blue filter in quick succession. a lamp, you have to replace every 1,000 hours or so. They claim 2,000 or 3,000 hours, but and that's several $100. Now with
and that's the reason I was looking at the LED, because, you know, you can turn it on and off and you're not hurting the light on it.
That's exactly right. And those LEDs are going to last tens of thousands of hours. And and they're also going to be very, very stable. Lamps, regular white lamps, you turn them on and after 100 hours, they drop in brightness and they change in color a little bit. And then over time, they slowly drop as well. LEDs stay very, very stable. Now, the one disadvantage of them is that they aren't very bright. They don't put out as much light as a traditional lamp, which is why
if you have a controlled room and you calibrate the unit.
Yep, that's the answer. That's exactly the answer. And you don't get too big a screen, which is why I think Runco probably recommends a 96-inch screen. You're going a little bigger than that. Okay, so you might not get as much light off of the screen as you would with a 96. But then again, you're going to get a better black level. And with total light control of the room in a dark room, I think it's going to look fantastic. I've seen some LED illuminated projectors in a dark room. And I really love the look of them. So I think you're going to be real happy with that.
What's the biggest screen you think I can go with and be safe?
I'd have to do a little research on that. I suppose I would guess up to 120.
120?
Yeah, that might be pushing it. Yeah, I'd say maybe 105. I've got 102 inch 2.35 to 1 screen, so that's wider than your normal 16:9 screen. And
well, I'm going with the 235 also.
Ah, you are. What screen material?
Yes. Well, I'm probably going to go with the Stuart for the Studio Tech, and I think it's 100, but I'm not sure. I don't have the paper in front of me.
Well, are you going to do? Does this projector do 3D? I don't remember. I don't think it does.
No. I'm not into 3D. I don't like 3D that much.
Okay. Well, good then. To tell you the truth, I love a 100. By the way, the 100 is a special screen material that reflects light in all directions equally. It has a gain of 1.0, and it's only appropriate. The only place you can use it is a theater with very dark walls and total light control, such as we're talking about. That's exactly the screen I have in my projector testing room. Is a Stuart Studio Tech 100. 102 inches wide, 2.35 to 1 aspect ratio, in a room painted Munsell gray, with 9% reflectivity. That's a lot of gobbledygook for everybody to digest there. But what you're talking about, I would really be happy sitting in that room watching a movie.
Okay, now get back to the 4K for 1 second.
Oh, sure.
I've got a buddy of mine. We've been arguing about this back and forth, and you know, you hear a lot about it. You know, a lot of your receivers are starting to put, some of your receivers are starting to put upscaling to 4K.
Yep.
But like you said earlier, that's something you should not consider right now, right?
No, I wouldn't. There is no way, there's no plan in place for studios to distribute 4K material to the home. So, and that's not going to be for a while. That's really not going to be for a while. I do want to say that SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room is being quite vociferous in his recommendation of a Studio Tech 130, which has a gain of
130.
It has a gain of 1.3, so you'll get a little more light back to your seating position, but the off-axis light won't be as good. So if you have a wide angle, if you have people sitting way over to the side, they will see. Well, then I might suggest a 130. Because the LEDs do have less light coming out of them, the 130 will bring more light back to a central seating position. And with the LEDs, that might really be a better choice. SoCal Ray Jr. is a very knowledgeable fellow about this sort of thing. And I can understand his point. I use a 100 mostly as a review tool, because it gives me exactly what the projector's putting out. But in the case of a home use, I might suggest going with a 130.
Okay. And that Q750, I can't go wrong with it, can I?
I don't think so. I think we reviewed it. Go to hometheater.com. And
I have operated, what the review you gave on it was great.
Yeah. I think it's a fabulous projector. It's expensive. It's a run pro, so it's expensive. But if you have the money, you know, go for it.
Well, they got a good deal on right now. That's the reason I'm not really looking. I'm not ready to do one till about next year, but the price is right now, and I can't hardly turn it down.
Hey, there you go. Good luck to you.
Let me ask you one more thing for you. On the Integra 80.3 has 4K upscaling in it.
Yep.
Is that going to do you any good?
I don't think so. Certainly not without a 4K projector. And even then, the tests we've done with 4K upscaling, which is taking high definition 1080p, 1920 by 1080 pixels, upscaling that to 4K, which is 4096. Actually, I think the Integra goes to 3840 by 2160. And looking at that on a 4K projector, you don't really gain that much.
30 seconds.
So I don't think it's a big deal right now. And the only 4K projectors you can get are from Sony, which is $25,000, and from JVC, which won't accept a 4K signal. It'll only upscale to actually quad HD, which is this 3840 by 2160.
And that's an E-shift.
I'm sorry, with the E-shift, correct. That's the feature that they use to do that upscaling. I don't think it's that big a deal. I wouldn't worry about it in your case, certainly not with the Runco 750. Thanks so much for the call. This is Scott Wilkinson. I appreciate that very much. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hello there. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and online editor of HomeTheater.com, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's out of the country right now. He might be flying back. He might be in the air as we speak, as a matter of fact. He was in Norway for a week attending the Northern Lights Photographic Festival. Probably took a bunch of pictures. And I'm sure looking forward to hearing all about his adventures when he returns to these airwaves next week. Meanwhile, we are here talking about home theater, big screen TVs, projectors, surround sound speakers, AVRs, AV receivers, Blu-ray players, all the stuff that brings stories to your home in an electronic manner. But not only that, I'm also very interested in commercial cinema. I like going out to the movies. Some people don't, but I do. I like the social experience, and I like the bigger screen, and the ability to see things that aren't available at home yet. Partly it's my job, and I must admit, I really love my job, where I get to report on these things. I write about them on HomeTheater.com, where, in fact, I answer questions two or three times a week. And if you care to send me an email where with a question, you can do so at scott@techguylabs.com. And I'm sorry to say I get far more questions than I can answer, but I try and pick representative ones, and I answer as many as I can. And you can go to HomeTheater.com, and my blog there for that is Ask Home Theater. And, you know, clearly I take as many calls as I can on the show, but I can only get a few of those. So I try to answer as many as I can on my website. So if you do have any questions, hopefully I will be able to answer it on HomeTheater.com. If you send it to Scott@TechGuyLabs.com. And of course, TechGuyLabs.com is the website for this show, The Tech Guy. And you can go there to get the show notes. Everything we've talked about today and yesterday is being faithfully written down by James DeRuvo and will be posted on the website in short order. You can also get this show as a podcast later on. It will be posted on iTunes and YouTube and twit.tv. And in this particular case, since I'm the host, it will also be posted on my website, HomeTheater.com. Now, if you have a question today, we have one more hour to go, and I'll be taking as many calls as I can. And you can get in by calling 8888-ASK-LEO, which translates to 888-827-5536. Or you can join the chat room, and I sure hope you do, because that's a really fun place to hang out. I always watch it whenever I'm on any of the shows I do here, this one, or my own podcast called Home Theater Geeks, which records Mondays from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Pacific Time, or 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can tune in live at live.twit.tv, and you can join the chat room, and I pass on questions from the chat room to my various guests on that show as well. There's about 775 people in the chat room right now, and they're what Leo calls the smart kids in the back of the room. And whenever there's a question that I can't answer, or maybe some additional information that I maybe didn't think about, no doubt about it, somebody in the chat room will bring it up and bring it to my attention. And I so appreciate Leo's brain, which this weekend is Scott's brain. So I'm going to get right back to the phones here, and I'm going to talk to Justin, in Austin, Texas. Hey, Justin, welcome to the show.
It's Jason.
Jason, I'm sorry. Pardon me.
It's okay. Thanks for hosting the show this weekend, Scott. I'm never able to listen to your show on Mondays, and I'm very much a TV and video audio geek like yourself.
You're
and
a geek.
I just love talking about it and stuff. And
yeah,
and
me
I have a nice, I have a nice little home theater.
Excellent.
a little background. I have a 60-inch Pioneer plasma.
Okay, how old is it?
And it is almost 4 years old, and I estimate that I have 12,000 hours of use on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it for video games at all.
Good.
And I mainly watch sports and, you know, sitcoms mm-hmm. of that nature and mm-hmm. a lot of concerts.
Good.
And I also have a Pioneer Elite receiver and Paradigm surround sound speakers, which I love.
Sounds like a great, a great system to me.
Yeah. My only concern is sometimes I'll be watching movies. Just the other weekend, I was watching Moneyball.
Great movie, by the way. Really great movie.
It is. And this TV show, Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. HBO. Very popular. It's a little too bloody for me, but people just rave about it, so okay.
Yeah. So really two questions. The main question is, when I watch that show and that other in movies that have a lot of black on the screen,
mm-hmm.
The past month or so, I've noticed in the center of the TV, in the upper center of the TV, I'll see a little bit of purple where I think should be black. I don't know if it's the camera maybe moving too fast. I'm wondering if the TV is running out of plasma.
Well, that's a fallacy that is perpetrated too often, that plasma TVs, that the gas leaks out and has to be recharged or replaced. That is not true. The plasma stays in there just fine.
Okay.
But you say you think you have about 12,000 hours on this set?
Yeah. That's what I estimate. If I go 8 hours a day, which I don't,
right.
7 days a week,
yep.
for 52 weeks, for almost, which under, that's an exaggeration. Probably it's not even 12. It's probably closer to 11.
Okay.
1,000.
Well, and, you know, it shouldn't be a problem because most plasma TVs, even back that old, were rated at, 40, 50, 60,000 hours.
Yes.
So you shouldn't be having a problem because of its age.
Okay. Okay.
Now,
you
say that there's a black area, that whenever there is a black area, it kind of looks a little purplish, perhaps?
Yeah, just in little small little parts where, I guess, actually I see it more so where it'll be majority of the screen will be black, but any spot where there'll be white or lighter images, you'll see just, I don't want to say a shadow of purple, like magenta, maybe even kind of color. But it's just there, just for a split second.
Huh.
I just don't know if the TV can keep up with the speed, but that shouldn't be an issue with plasma.
No, it really shouldn't be an issue. I can't think off the top of my head what that might be. Mubi in the chat room is saying early plasmas were rather flaky, weren't they? And yes, they were, but this is not an early plasma. Is it one of the early Kuros, I would guess.
It's not a Kuro. The Pioneer at the time had just their regular 50 and 60 inch,
uh-huh.
and then they also had 50, 60 inch Kuro. And
right.
I know they stopped production for a while, and they just restarted again. And I love the TV, and it's something I didn't want to cheap out on when I bought it.
No, and I agree with you. That was a smart move. I'll monitor the chat room and see what they have to say. SoCal Ray, if you're still in the chat room, you might have something to say about this. A little bit of Web 80 says it's a known issue with Kuros. Google it. But this isn't a Kuro, so that may not be the issue there. Thanks so much for the call, Jason. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
The canyons were burning. This
is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What we're listening to here is my wife, Joanna Kasdan, from her album Living Through History. This is a tune that she wrote, and we recorded, I think it was about 1997, 98, something like that. It was a while ago. And that saxophone you hear is actually a synthesized saxophone. The instrument is the Yamaha VL1, a great wind instrument synthesizer that uses a technology called physical modeling, which is fascinating. It takes the mathematics of acoustic wind instruments like a soprano saxophone or a trumpet or something, and generates waveforms based upon that those mathematics. And I'm using an electronic saxophone, the Yamaha WX5, to control the synthesizer. It responds to breath pressure, changing breath pressure, and really creates a very convincing soprano saxophone. And so thanks, Kyle, for playing a little bit of Joanna's album. She has a lovely voice, and one of the many reasons I fell in love with her. So let's get right back to the phones. I'm going to go to Dave in Fullerton. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. If your wife is as pretty as she sounds, she you're a lucky man.
Oh, thank you so much. I certainly think so.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad to get in touch with you today. I'm so glad you're taking the show this weekend. It's perfect timing for me.
Thanks.
I got a question. I recently upgraded from an old Sony 5.1 receiver to a new Onkyo TXNR609.
Very nice.
Got a good price on it.
Excellent.
So, any rate, I've been always running the Sony through a Bose Acoustimass system.
Okay.
5.1 system. And a strange thing happened during the purchase of that system many, many moons ago, about 99, is I ended up with two extra satellite speakers for it. And I was wondering, it just occurred to me, since a 7.2 Onkyo receiver, I was wondering if I could take those extra speakers I had, they're in boxes in the garage, and just run them directly to the receiver to add the surround sound, either for the rear or the sides.
You're talking about these are two extra Bose satellites?
Correct.
The answer is no.
No.
I'm really sorry to say that.
I understand that the bass module, the Acoustimass, does the filtering.
I'm afraid so. They're designed that way.
There is crossover adjustments on the Onkyo.
Yeah, I mean, you could try it. I asked Bose this question, and they basically said, don't do it. It's not the way it's designed to be used. It won't sound very good. I'm really sorry to say that that's not going to be a good solution for you. And, you know, if you ask me, I would say your next upgrade would be to another speaker system.
That's what it sounded like. Well, disappointing answer, but a very appreciative man here for taking my call.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your call, and good luck. The Pioneer speakers that I was talking about earlier today are fabulous and not very expensive, so when you can afford to shell out $500-$600. If you have the room for them, they're a little bulky, certainly more bulky than the Bose, but you will get a far better audio experience.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Let's go to Mike in Arcadia. Hey, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Just that system many, many moons ago, about 99.
Holy smokes, Mike. Turn down your radio.
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Will you turn down your radio, please?
Yeah, it's down.
Okay, great. How can I help you?
Is this Scott?
That's me.
How you doing? I just wanted to ask you a question. You and Leo seem to tell the majority of the people who call who have problems with their older units to usually buy a new one. I've been an electronic technician since 1978, and I'd like to hear you give the mom-and-pop places a chance to salvage these things.
Well, you know, that's a good point, and I'm glad you're making it. Unfortunately, as you probably know, the mom and pop stores are kind of disappearing.
They are, and I blame Best Buy for that. They put Circuit City out of business. They've really done a number on themselves. They've had to lay off quite a number of people.
Yeah, they've shopped a bunch. They've closed a bunch of stores, laid off a bunch of people. They've sort of. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense.
Yeah, in my experience, and I'm not in consumer electronics anymore. Work in industrial electronics, but you know, the majority of the people want something that works, and they don't need to have the brand new. You know, they're not all audiophiles or videophiles, and I think you may, the callers may want to give the local places a $30 kill charge to check and see if their stuff can be repaired.
Well, if some, you know, if a local place will do a $30 diagnostic, I mean, most of the places I've gone, the diagnostics is like $90 or so. And
well,
then,
again, I've been out of consumer for a while, too, so you're probably right.
And then the repair, if they are going to do a repair, it's several hundred dollars at least. So it depends on the product, too. But very often, it's going to be not worth the money to repair something when you can buy something new with better features and better performance for something around the same amount of money.
And that's the point. What happened, really, I think, when the flat panels came out, and you started getting parts from China and other places, they didn't play by the rules, and there was no documentation for repairing these things. I'll tell you, I got a manual once from LG, and I was trying to figure out how to adjust the gamma, I forget, but in there was thrown in, it said, if this does not work, contact your local district attorney. That was in the manual.
That was in the manual?
So I think they're trying to just say, here's a manual, it doesn't really make sense, the circuit diagrams are incorrect. So anyway, that's why a lot of the mom and pops are going out of business. You get parts, they don't work. But anyway,
it's a difficult problem. It's
a pet peeve of mine for years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a throwaway thing.
Hey, listen, I'm with you. Somebody in the chat room talked about how, you know, buying new things all the time brings more waste into the world, and that's a drag. Certainly, I recommend e-cycling for your old electronics instead of just tossing it out. But, you know, the mom and pop stores are going away. Repair prices are very high. It's a very difficult question. But I thank you so much for bringing it up because it's worth thinking about.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
I enjoyed the show. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Okay, before we move along, I think we don't have quite enough time to take another call this round, but we're going to get to that very shortly. I will let you know that in case you just tuned in, my name is Scott Wilkinson. I'm the home theater geek, and I'm filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back right after this. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by DSL Extreme, Leo's own internet service provider. For super fast internet access at an amazing price, it's DSL Extreme. The music you're hearing is from the Southern California Early Music Consort, the band that I have played in for many years at the Renaissance Fair. This is the Loud Ensemble. I'm playing bass sack butt, as a matter of fact, in this recording. It's one of the processionals that we played for the Queen herself, Elizabeth I, as she processed through the Shire. It's a far distance to go from the Renaissance Fair and wearing tights and drinking mead to talking about home theater on the radio and the internet, but that's exactly the path I have taken in my life. And I'm so happy to be with you here today talking about one of my favorite subjects, home theater, audio, and video. I'm Scott Wilkinson, of course, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And got a bunch of interesting calls on the line. I'm going to get right to them. I've got Tony in Culpeper, California. Welcome to the show, Tony. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You got a question about 3D, and I'm a big 3D fan, so let's go.
Well, I love the 3D movies, but how much longer are the theaters going to continue to charge for the glasses? Why can't I just buy a pair of glasses and bring them with me every time and not be charged?
You can.
In this area, you can't. Well, why not?
Well, in your area, does the theater actually charge something different, extra fee for the glasses?
$3 per use.
Wow.
And they turn around and recycle them. They clean them up and put them back in bags.
Yep.
And they keep recycling the whole thing. I want to just have a pair. My own personal pair, just to bring with me.
Easy to do,
and not have to continue to pay.
Sure. Now, is the theater in your area a Real D 3D theater, or is it IMAX?
Real D.
Real D. You're in luck.
Yes.
There are a number of companies that sell Real D compatible 3D glasses. The one that comes to mind is Marchon, Marchon.
Right.
And you can buy a pair. You can buy clip-ons, in fact. Do you wear glasses normally, prescription glasses?
I do.
Then so do I. And so what you want to do is you want to buy a pair of clip-ons. They look a little geeky, but then again, we're geeks after all, aren't we not?
Right.
I think we are all geeks on this bus. And so I don't mind looking geeky. I don't really care how it looks. Some people, you know, with these 3D glasses, they go, oh, it looks so uncool. And I go, who cares? I don't care. I want to look at the movie. I want to see the movie exactly as it's supposed to be. So if you go to a company like Marchon, Oakley, I think, makes them as well. You can get 3D glasses that are compatible with Real D. And take them with you to the theater every time. That's the way to go.
Okay.
In Burbank, where I live, they haven't started charging for glasses yet. I'm kind of waiting for them to do that, and I didn't think many places did, but apparently you live in a place that does. Now, this won't work for IMAX 3D because IMAX uses a different type of polarization for 3D. So I just have to tell you that I like IMAX 3D the best of all 3D because it's brighter because they use two projectors. But they use a different kind of polarization, so those Real D 3D glasses won't work there. However, the Real D 3D glasses will work with passive 3D TVs from Vizio, LG, and Toshiba.
I have seen those.
Yeah, so those same glasses will work exactly for any of those TVs if that's what you end up getting for your own home theater if you don't have one already.
Cool. I want to throw another question at you.
Sure, go for it.
I heard your opinion on the first Star Wars movie that came out in 3D. How is George Lucas going to take the original Star Wars from 1977 and bring that into a 3D environment? How is that going to work?
Well, he could do it the same way that... I hope he doesn't do it the same way that he did with Episode 1, which was very poor. I hope he does do it the same way as James Cameron did with Titanic. Now, Titanic was a lot later originally, but you can do it with any movie. It doesn't matter when it was made. The key is to evaluate, to take a look at each scene, each frame, ultimately, which is why it takes so long, and evaluate where things are in the frame, in the depth dimension, in the Z-axis, if you will. And to evaluate, you know, how things are rounded in that axis and so on. And if you take care with that, as James Cameron did, you can get a very effective result. JVC just at NAB show a couple weeks ago, was showing a system that they have that kind of does some of that automatically, and it seemed to be doing a pretty good job. So maybe we're coming to a point where that's going to be easier to do, but it doesn't matter when the movie was originally made. As long as you take care with how it's done, it can be done well. Now, whether George Lucas will do it right or not is another question.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks for taking your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, so I got Jay in Providence, North Carolina. Hey, Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, I'm planning a sound system upgrade at home, and before I commit to doing anything like adding insulation to the walls or getting some kind of bigger low-distortion amplifiers, I'm wondering if anything has come along in the last 20 years that I should know about that can help in combating outside noise.
By that you mean noise from outside the room coming into the room?
Outside the house, like cars and things.
Well, certainly there are plenty of things you can do. It all depends on how much money you want to spend. In fact, yesterday we were talking about the problem of when you go to a multiplex and you get into a nice, quiet scene in a multiplex, and then next door they're showing, you know, Clash of the Titans and everything bombastic, the subwoofers come through the walls. So the commercial cinema space needs to do something about that as well. But you can also do plenty of stuff at home. You need to, well, again, it depends on how much you want to spend. The ideal situation is to build a room within a room. That is to isolate the room completely from the rest of the house. And you would need really an architect and a contractor to do that, but that is the best idea. Otherwise, you can get various products that do a much better job of insulation than your standard insulation. There's a company called, I think it's called Quiet Products or something like that. They make Quiet Rock, which is sheetrock, insulative sheetrock. Also depends on how you build the framing of the room. Are you building this room from scratch? Is that what you're doing?
Well, not really, because I'm not, at this point, I don't really want to commit to staying in the house.
One minute.
What I'm thinking about, and I failed to mention this earlier, is that I've never actually stepped up to Blu-ray, and I'm wondering if things along that line that have come along in the last 20 years, which it's been like 20 years since I've put a system together,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if things like that are going to be a better yield per dollar in terms of upping the quality.
Well, certainly. If you don't have Blu-ray now, getting Blu-ray, and presumably you'll have a high-def TV or projection or some sort of display, with a surround sound system and so on. And if you install all of that, you're going to get just an infinitely better experience than you might have now. And that would certainly be a lot less expensive than trying to build isolation into your room. And particularly if you're not sure you're going to stay in the house for a long time, I wouldn't necessarily recommend spending the money to, you know, float the room, as it's called. But yeah, by all means, upgrade to Blu-ray. No question about that. And it's cheap, too. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the television man. Thank you to the chat room for coming up with a suggestion for the bumper music. This is Talking Heads, Television Man.
Into the Beatles.
And Into the Beatles, thank you. Would you wind up and walk out on me? Yeah. Kyle Benham, spinning the tunes.
And last but not least, The Doors.
Ah, and of course, we have to end with This Is the End. It's the last segment of the day and of the weekend. Thank you to John Slanina for suggesting this. This is the end. Oh. Very nice. Nice mashup. Loquacious says, or rather, Matt W783 says to Kyle Benham, great mashup indeed. A little help from our friends from the chat room. And now we're coming close to the end of a fabulous weekend. I want to thank everybody who has... There it is. Took a little while for the guitar player to get in. Yeah, this is the end. I'm going to take another call here in a second, but I do want to take a moment to thank Kyle Benham at the board, spinning the tunes, truly a creative master. And Gina Salvati for screening the calls. Thank you so much for that. John Slanina, the studio manager here at Twit, for running the board most of the time, although Greg Burnett's on here right now. And Eli Rosen-Duran, the intern of the decade here at Twit, who's doing a fabulous job helping out wherever he can. And to Leo Laporte, I have to say thank you so much for the opportunity to sit in for you, fill in. They're awfully big shoes to fill, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to do it. I just have a blast doing this. As my mentor in the radio world, there is none better. So I thank you, Leo, as you wing your way back home from the frozen north of Norway, maybe not quite so frozen these days. I hope you got to see the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis. It's on my bucket list. It's one of the things I want to do before I make my way out of this world, is to see that amazing sight. So I really hope you got a chance to see it, and even better, if you got a chance to take some pictures. I will look forward to seeing them very, very much. Okay, let's see what else we can get in here. One more call. Let's go to David in Merced. Hey, David. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thank you for hosting the show this weekend.
My pleasure.
got a question here. I've got an old Pioneer Elite VFX 29TX that I'm going to retire.
Uh-huh. Nice receiver, by the way.
It's been very good. The only problem I've ever had has been the DSP board problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking to replace it, of course, with a receiver with HDMI capability.
Sure.
Power output of the receiver is not critical since I'm driving the speakers with some QSC amps.
Oh.
But the problem I'm running into is finding receivers that have RCA pre-outs.
Well, have you thought about doing just a pre-pro, a preamp processor? Onkyo?
I have not...
Okay, Onkyo and Integra make some pretty good ones, very good ones, in fact. Emotiva also makes one that I don't think we've reviewed, but I know a lot of people who find Emotiva electronics to be very, very good, and it's a very value-oriented proposition. So I would suggest, since you already have power amps that you're using to power your speakers, you don't need a receiver which has power amps in it that you're not going to even use.
That's correct.
So,
does the preamp stuff have tuner capability? Because it will be playing music also.
Well, now some preamps, I'd have to go do some research on that, whether they have a radio tuner like AM, FM. A lot of them these days do have internet access, and they'll bring in Pandora and things like that. So that shouldn't be a problem. Radio, though, I'm not 100% sure about. That you'd have to do a little research on. But I really think a pre-pro would be your best bet, because you get plenty of HDMI switching, you get all the latest audio formats, and you don't have to pay for those power amps in the AV receiver that you're not going to use. So SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room says he would stay with the Onkyo Integra units.
Onkyo Integra.
Integra is sort of the high-end brand of Onkyo. It's kind of like Lexus and Toyota, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
He suggests the 80.3, which I think we just reviewed. The other option, A6 in the chat room, says is the Marantz AV7005. And I agree with that. That was very highly reviewed.
And that's all just a preamp section.
It's just a preamp section. What's called a preamp processor.
Okay.
Or pre-pro. So yeah, those are two recommendations, and I really do suggest that you look at that angle rather than going for another receiver.
Good suggestion. Thank you for your help.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling. Got a couple minutes left. I do want to quickly mention that our board op and music maestro Kyle Benham has a little website set up here called adkyle.com, adkyle.com. We are hoping very much to find him some employment in L.A., which will keep him in L.A., and will also keep him running the board for us on the weekends for the tech guy. I sincerely hope that that is successful, and I want to make sure everybody knows so that perhaps somebody might find something for him to do. Let me go one more call here. I think I got enough time for Benny in Pasadena. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How you doing?
Hi, Scott. This is Benny. I'm just wondering, are my only options Hulu.com and Netflix for watching television shows on the internet?
No, I think not. I think those are some of the primary ones. But you've also got Vudu, which I think is more movies, but they have some TV shows. I'm going to check with the chat room here. I bet you they'll be able to tell me. They're gonna come in right here for a second and let me know that there are some other options. Hulu is certainly one of the big ones. You can also go to the individual stations, broadcasters like ABC or CBS. They'll do a lot of streaming directly from their own sites, so that would be another way to go. David Bix in the chat room does say that Vudu has TV shows and at the same price as Amazon. And there you go. Amazon is another one that has it.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And most likely I'm going to have to pay. Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Now, Amazon, you can become an Amazon Prime member, which gives you access to a lot of content for, I think it's 70, 80 bucks a year.
Okay.
Something like that. You also get expedited shipping if you order stuff from Amazon, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that way I can watch my shows like whenever I have time.
Yeah, exactly. Steven3X in the chat room says clicker.com as well. Hey, we've come to the end of a fabulous weekend. I want to thank everybody for joining me. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everybody, geek out!